Hello, welcome to the Old Man Orange Podcast. I'm Spencer Scott Holmes, bringing you another Old Man Orange Presents via VHS episode. One of them from the rarities vault that we have from back in the day that just never got put out. So come join us for another fun-filled retro movie review. Let's jump on in.
So what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Via VHS Retro Movie Podcast. We're going to the late VHS era. DVDs are creeping in. They're starting to steal VHS's thunder. They're not quite out of the stores yet, you know, but they're definitely not the hot, cool thing anymore. We're going to 2001, a month before shit gets real, 2 months before shit gets real. And back in the happy times from the 90s, still weren't over yet. We're going to July of 2001 to look at Kiss of the Dragon, which the whole movie, I'm like, what the fuck is it called this? And then at the end of the movie, I'm like, yeah, that's why it's called this. It's awesome.
Jet Li explains it well right then, the end, you know, of his acupuncture type stuff. And it goes, it shows you the Kiss of the Dragon.
Kiss of the Dragon.
Well, it really does sound kind of weird because you think about it, like, it sounds like Kiss of the Dragon sounds like it's going to be one of those kind of weird, like, romance, like, maybe with, like, just a little bit of action. Like, The Specialist with Stallone and Sharon Stone. Like, it feels like it's going to be one of those type of movies where it's like, it's, you know, you go in there thinking you're going to get like a Sharon Stone, Stallone action movie, and that it's kind of on the down low.
Until like 5 minutes left in the movie, I thought that the Kiss of the Dragon was the tattoo on that hooker's back at the beginning. And I'm like, is that really what this movie's named after? I just feel like it was very, because the camera focuses on it, but we'll get there. But I'm joined by Mr. Scott Holmes, by the way. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
I'm Wesley. I realize I don't always introduce myself. I just introduce you.
You know, and it's that thing that you always got to think about. You do like the Stan Lee thing that, you know what? It's everybody's first podcast at some point. So
yeah
you always got to assume that there's always going to be that fresh face showing up, you know, to say, what's this all about? Who are these hooligans talking about movies and VHSs and this old technology that they try to keep alive because that's all they know?
Because I have my watch.
Calculator watch.
My calculator watch.
And doing trigonometry, like, you know, it's going out of style.
I have trapper keepers.
Oh, I got your trapper keepers.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, if we were gonna go on show and tell, I would just pull out just my chart stopping new kids on the block folder.
Oh, okay. I'm not trying to one up you here, but we're gonna get going. Actually, I will trade you. Let's say we're in elementary school, I'm gonna trade you. We're doing show and tell if you're not watching the podcast. You're just listening to it. This is going to be awkward for you, but I'm going to do it anyway. First off, okay, I'm going to open my Trapper Keeper. I'm going to get right to the microphone here.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Yeah. That Trapper Keeper action.
So I had to make sure I had the right one. So my wife was one time was going out to the store, and it's usually me. It's usually I'm the one at the store, and she's texting me while I'm there telling me what to get. But this time she was going. She goes, do you need anything? And it was right before one of our podcasts. This is a couple years ago. And I'm like, I actually need a notebook to write stuff down. It actually helped me out a lot. She goes, okay, what kind do you want? I said, something retro, some old school. And she gets me this Lisa Frank. And she thought, hey, I'll be funny and play a trick on him. He's not going to use that.
Oh, Jokes hell on no.
You, bitch.
Takes you back.
Yeah. Yeah. Still got it. So there's that.
There is that, you know.
Yeah. We would be so cool in 1993.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? That's what I felt like. All this stuff that, like, I've kind of collected over the years. And it's like, if you had the power of all these things at one point in time, you'd be set. Dude,
the things you have? Holy shit, if you could time travel.
I know. Just the weird stuff that I found over the times and just the things to hold on to for dear life. When people try to tell you to get rid of your stuff, I always say, no way.
They're like, who's that cool guy in the Devil's Advocate t-shirt with the surge pencil? Like, who's that guy? I want to be his friend.
You know, when I wore that Devil's Advocate t-shirt to school, when that t-shirt did come out, I don't think anybody thought too much of it then.
That is still my favorite piece of movie merch anybody has.
Well, that was the pay-per-view era of the 90s was the best because every movie you order, you got something.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Air Force One fanny pack too, right? From the movie.
Yeah, I got an Air Force One. Like, I don't even know what it is. It's not even really like a fanny pack. It's like an Air Force One, like maybe it's supposed to be like a toiletry bag, I think is what it is. I kept my Game Boys in it, is what I did.
I just wanted to be in the, like the meeting where like the pay-per-view like merch, movie merch meeting where they're like, okay, how guys, how are we going to promote Air Force One? Oh, I know, a pencil holder. Fuck it. Yeah, I agree. That's everybody on board. All right, there we go. Air Force One pencil holder. All right, call up our guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember then like, when I got Batman and Robin, I got a Superman action figure. I mean, it's close.
I mean, we're on the same, you know, brand.
Yeah, but it was a pretty cool Superman action figure because it was a Total Justice one where Superman's got the flying mullet going on and everything like that. Mm. So it's all well worth it. And then I want to say that Superman. The Spice Girls one I thought came with a holographic card or something like that. But it was just that time period where they gave out all kinds of neat stuff with everything. Actually, speaking of Spice Girls, I know we're doing the stupid show and tell thing.
Yeah,
we're just Spice go Girls this. Pin. There was the Take It Home VHS thing. Somebody must have had this at like probably Walmart, because you know back in those days, that's when like they would give out all that flair for like the employees mm-hmm. to wear to advertise stuff.
Oh yeah, dude, that's awesome. Actually, I'm really jealous of that.
I know, because I also found at the same place they had a Star Wars Episode One that said "Take It Home Today" or whatever. Mm-hmm. To own on video.
I've got some Episode One stickers on the other side of this thing. My coolest piece of movie merch I don't have in my possession is sitting in Maryland right now. Uh-huh. And it's that Episode One front cover to the Pepsi vending machine.
Oh, the Pepsi thing. Gosh. I think about those Pepsi machines every once in a while when, like, I just remember used to see one that I would drive past for, like, ever. It just, like, it sat at, like, this old gas station that the gas station almost went away. And then the Pepsi machine was there for quite some time.
We'll get to Kiss of the Dragon. We vacationed in St. Augustine, Florida. And one year we went down to St. Augustine at the campground at Ocean Grove Campground, St. Augustine. There's a Pepsi machine right by the pool. But this year we went, obviously 2001, same year as Kiss of the Dragon. So there's,
it all ties together.
It all does tie together. But while I was there, there was a Phantom Menace Pepsi machine, and they kept it there for years. I mean, I would say even after Revenge of the Sith came out, it was still there, and then it was just gone. And I remember just feeling this just immense sadness when it was gone. And I thought I was the only weird person on earth that cared about these Pepsi vending machines. And then there's just like this strange cult following behind these things. And people take pictures of them, put them on Reddit, like, I found one, guys, in Pennsylvania. And people make like a fucking pilgrimage to go see it. So somebody sold me a cover to one of them for $50, but it's in Maryland and they won't send it to me. So I have to find a way to get to Maryland.
Yeah, to get there, you know. Well, if you get the Pepsi machine to go with it, I do have a sealed Queen Amidala one to go, Diet Pepsi to go in there.
That's right. Yeah, we talked about you trying that before, and we decided it was a terrible decision.
No, it was just asking for a not good death, slow, painful death. It would be like a Kiss of the Dragon.
The Kiss of the Dragon.
It would be like that, you know, but probably worse, actually. That Richard guy got off much more easier than I would if I drank that Pepsi.
What a dick. His name's Richard. All right. Well, you know, we're sitting here reminiscing about 2001. We might as well reminisce about the movie Kiss of the Dragon from 2001, July 6, 2001. So I think we should fire up that rewind review. What do you think?
I think it's already firing itself up right as we speak.
Let's fucking do this shit. All right. Kiss of the Dragon 2001. I had never seen this. We'll get to the review in a moment. I can't wait to talk about this one because I had a lot of fun with it in a good way. Not like when sometimes on this show when we say we had fun with this, it's a very nefarious undertones because it's like we're going to rip the shit out of this one. At least I am. And you're going to be nice about it. Like, this is still great, even though it sucked.
You know, Slipstream had some interesting things going on.
Now, this one is actually really good. But before we get to the review, we like to take you back in time. And you could reminisce with us. And we're going to go back to when July 6, 2001, when Kiss of the Dragon was in theaters. And we're going to look at the box office. And we're going to look at the music charts. And I'm just going to go ahead and give you some foreshadowing here. They both suck. I don't know which one's worse. But I'm going to say the box office is actually worse. But these Billboard charts are really trying. So we're going to, again, choose July 6, 2001. We look at the music first. Number five this week is a song I actually do like. It's probably the only one on here I do like. Is Let Me Blow Your Mind by Eve and Gwen Stefani.
I think I know that one.
Up your asses. Get tits and glasses. Something having hot flashes. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I remember.
My favorite part is like I know that we're going to go through these songs, and I was clearly like at the age that these songs are probably all intended for, and I probably know very little of them.
Oh yeah. I didn't listen to this shit.
No, that's what I always think about. It's like one of those ones where it's like, we watch those 70s movies. I'm like, oh, no, I don't know all these tunes. And there we go with my jams. Go to the 2000s and you're like, I don't remember that one.
Well, real quick, I'm not going to spend time on them. I'm just going through 6 through 10 is way better because it's Drops of Jupiter in My Hair. I hate that song. But you have Rob With Me with Nelly, which is pretty good. Get Your Freak On by Missy Misdemeanor Elliott. Set 8th on the charts, which was it this song? Yeah. Rolling Stone had this in like the top 10 songs of all time. If you have Rolling Stone, I'm not saying it's a bad song, but
yeah.
Eat shit.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. But yeah, My Baby, Little Romeo, Fiesta by R. Kelly featuring Jay-Z. We got Peaches and Cream by 112 at 4. Hanging by a Moment Here With You by Lifehouse. Lady Marmalade, number 2, with Christina Aguilera, Lil' Kim, Maya, and Pink. Let me tell you. Song, yeah. Video.
Different story.
Video was nice.
You throw an Aerosmith song on top of it, and then you got something.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yes, true. If they would have had that with a Aerosmith. Oh, my Lord. And You Remind Me by Usher. I'm surprised that song's this old. You remind me of a girl that I... Yeah. I had a girl that listened to all this stuff.
See, listen to this guy. I felt like I was like a man out of time. You know, as I said, this is like something that like literally this is who they were trying to sell it to, you know, and instead wasn't having it.
I was 16.
Yeah. So I guess
I wasn't listening to any of this. Yeah, I was listening to classic rock and country was still holding on a little bit, just a little bit, but not much.
Yeah. I was about at like 14 and probably went to go see Willie Nelson for the first time. And that was like one of the first concerts I went to.
Really?
Yeah. That was the first big concert I went to, is Willie Nelson. I've seen him 3 times.
I was supposed to see him once. They have something called Merle Fest.
Oh, yeah.
Out here where I'm at. That's real close. Actually, that North Wilkesboro Speedway I saw him about a couple of weeks ago. It's right over by that. And Merle Fest. And I was supposed to go see them. And I saw some cool people there, but I didn't see Willie.
I guess see Willie.
And Robert Plant was supposed to be there one time, and I missed that.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that would have been cool.
Yeah, it was blue. I still love bluegrass Robert Plant a lot, but it was not Led Zeppelin Robert Plant. It was him and Alison Krauss because they have a couple albums together now.
Yeah, that would be one of those ones that'd be kind of cool to see. That I sometimes like those kind of alternative concerts though, where you see somebody like, oh, I did. It's something completely different. That's neat.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of bluegrassiness if you listen to some of the Led Zeppelin stuff, Ronnie Ear Stomp and all that. So anyway, let's go to the box office real quick, which is equally riveting. Honestly, this might be I'm going to go ahead and say, considering when it is, considering July, we're at the peak of the summer movie season. This might be the worst box office I've seen collectively.
I'm really excited to hear what this is now, because when I wasn't listening to music like that, I know I was at the movie theaters.
Oh God. Yeah. Number 1, Cats and Dogs.
Oh God.
The box office. Yeah. Scary Movie 2.
I never could get into those ones. Those are the ones that I remember. Like that was the popular one of all the kids, but
I liked them at the time. They're extremely dated now. Like there's like the whole parody of like that one basketball commercial that was really popular like 23 years ago. And people will watch that now and be like, what the fuck? It has no, like a lot of that stuff is very dated.
Well, that's why pop culture stuff. Those parody movies. I mean, like that's like, I tried watching that Kentucky Fried movie. The one that's like the, in a sense, it's the original like scary movie, like parody kind of thing, mm-hmm. Airplane, all that stuff. It's like 1973.
Yeah.
It's still got some funny moments in it, but there's definitely some of those jokes. It's like, if you weren't, you know, watching TV in 1972, you're going to miss out on some of these things, because that was like what that show was all about. It reminded me of, like, someone just sat around watching TV and wrote a script off of this by, like, you know, what if I just kind of turn that all into different parodies and jokes and so on.
Yeah, that rarely works, or at least I think it was popular at the time. I have that movie on VHS. I've never seen it.
Well, that movie was talked really, I remember there was a history of the 70s movies, and that movie was talked about very highly in that book. So that's what made me want to watch it. And then I was like, oh, okay. It's you know, I guess if that's the first time you've ever seen it, and that's like a very fresh and like, wow, I can't believe someone thought about doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, by nowadays we have all kinds of movies like that. And I always say those are those movies. They're probably the best movie to work on. I bet you everybody has the best of time making it. You just know that you don't have a movie that you could really, you know, talk about afterwards.
Movie 43, looking at you. Yeah, so Cats and Dogs at number one, Scary Movie 2 at number two. A good movie, AI, Artificial Intelligence.
Oh, yeah, I like that one. The last one where, or whatever, the last of I'm just totally drawing a blank.
Haley Joel Osment.
Well, he's in it, but
Spielberg and
Spielberg directs it, but it was supposed to be Shining director, drawing a blank. Stanley Kubrick.
Stanley Kubrick.
That was supposed to be his like next movie, and then of course he passed away, and Steven Spielberg took it over.
That's interesting. Did not know this. Fast and the Furious, number four.
There's a like a ginormous movie of the time.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just gonna go ahead and say I hate those movies. I hate them so much.
Oh, okay. Well, see, this is like, because now we're getting to this point. I'm like, well, this, you know, there's a good movie right there, Fast and the Furious. Like,
I mean, I'm glad everyone else likes it. I know I'm in the minority. I want to give them a watch because I haven't watched any of them since Tokyo Drift. No, I haven't seen any of them since Too Fast, Too Furious. This is the last one I saw.
Oh, okay. Well, you've been out of the loop for like 20 years.
Yeah. I saw that when I was working at the movie theater, like one of my first jobs. So it's like, yeah, I haven't seen any of them since then. So I need to, because real quick, one of the people I love on YouTube, Patrick H. Willems, raves about the world building in those movies and how good it is. I'll just have to take his word for it, I guess. But we'll just do all those one day.
Yeah. I said, I've always enjoyed it, but the first one, well, it's literally Point Break just with cars. Yeah. Like it literally is the exact same. I think that's why I liked it so much, is because I'm like, well, I love Point Break. So
I can't take Vin Diesel seriously. I can't, like, when he's like, I live my mile a quarter mile at a time. No, the fuck you don't. I don't see, you know, I believe Stallone is a boxer. I believe Arnold Schwarzenegger is this android that comes back. I believe everything Bruce Willis is in. I do not believe. No.
What about him as Riddick?
I thought Riddick was okay.
I always feel Riddick was like, that's like, I think the Vin Diesel definitive role real, in my opinion. Like that to me feels like that's his Terminator.
Yeah, I like Riddick, but I live my life a quarter mile at a time. I'm like, shut the fuck up. I don't like you. All the guys I didn't like in high school, you're all of them. I don't know. Anyway, Kiss of the Dragons at number five at the box office, making $18 million. Dr. Dolittle 2, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, Shrek.
Tomb Raider, there's some big movies here for me.
Okay, I like Tomb Raider. Shrek. Atlantis, The Lost Empire, Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within.
Saw that one in the sky. See, you're just grabbing like that. I know where I was this 2001. I was at the movie theaters quite often.
Crazy, beautiful. Pearl Harbor. Don't even get started on Pearl Harbor.
I was there too.
Dude, just the, you know, hey, that's Michael, that's not historically accurate. Okay, who's going to remember? A lot of people. Everyone's fucking alive, Michael Bay. Like half these people, like there's going to be veterans that go to this movie that can tell you if fuck it.
Yeah, my grandpa was still alive at that point, and he was in the Navy in World War II.
Who gave him that movie? Fuck Michael Bay. Only on that one. Like, I understand the attraction of Michael Bay on everything else, but why Pearl Harbor? Why did you give him that movie?
I don't know. It's just one of those ones. It's like, you know, that's the movie that I used to, for a while there, when people didn't know who Josh Hartnett was, I would go, okay, you know, when you watch Pearl Harbor, okay, you know, it's got Ben Affleck in it. Well, Josh Hartnett is the guy who's not Ben Affleck.
Was he the cuck or the cucky? Which happened? Who got like left out of the picture and then came back? Ben Affleck stole his girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Josh Hartnett's the dude who took the girl because he's Josh Hartnett and he's just a little bit younger and a little bit more better looking and so on. And he fights vampires.
Hmm. Yeah, there you go.
You know how that Josh Hartnett thing, he just works his way in. You don't leave your girlfriend alone with Josh Hartnett. Not in 2001.
Not in the early 2000s, you don't.
No.
Maybe now. He and Orlando Bloom, you could just kind of leave. Like 2000s, not safe. Now, it's like, who's that guy?
Yeah, Orlando Bloom until Johnny Depp came back around for another round.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's why. Anyway, so Kiss of the Dragon.
Just the Dragon. What position was that one at? Sorry, on this movie list.
Oh, no, it was number five.
Okay, it was number five.
With 18 million.
That sounds about right, because, I mean, I'll say this. This is that era that, as far as kung fu movies kind of go, this was that sort of comeback era. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like there's about three eras of American martial arts in cinemas. There's, of course, the Bruce Lee and the post-Bruce Lee era, which is kind of like the first initial people like, oh, we're starting to get into this stuff. Lasts in the 70s for a bit, dips out. In the 80s, you sort of get that ninja renaissance where there's a lot of those, you know, of course, Ninja Turtles being one of the big pinnacles there. But there's a lot of ninja stuff even prior to that and so on. And then that kind of dips out for a moment. And then when Jackie Chan starts finally making his way to America in full swing with Rumble to the Bronx, and then, of course, Rush Hour being the big one, that brings Jet Li in, and Jet Li has this nice boom from about the late 90s to about mid 2000s. And then after about mid 2000s, Kung Fu movies are just not allowed to be shown in America ever again in cinemas.
Yeah. It's weird because you would think they would have been massive in the 90s. Like they were doing okay, but think of all but they were dominated by kids martial art movies.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is it's that, or there's kind of the straight to DVD type, or straight to, you know, VHS movies like American Ninja, you know, and all like the like that kind of stuff. Like that's where it's reserved at. Or you get movies that are like partially kind of kung fu movies, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme stuff, Steven Seagal, you know, those kind of like American, you know,
America
movies. Chuck America. Norris, but Chuck Norris is all martial arts, so there's nothing wrong there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's weird how all that worked, but this is one if I could say things I've discovered while doing this podcast, it's one I've said this before, how many movies could have been good? It's just another rewrite. Just like, just to have somebody look over it one time and then didn't go into production, like so many movies would have been saved. The other thing I've learned is how much I love kung fu, martial arts, any of that stuff. I just love it. It's not been a big enough thing for me watching movies. I missed out a lot. Like I still watched a lot of this stuff. Don't get me wrong. Like I love the Rush Hour movies. I saw some of the Jackie Chan stuff, but the Jet Li stuff I kind of missed out on. I didn't see Hard Boiled till we reviewed it.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of those things. So I missed out on a lot of that, but this, man, God, this was fun. This was a really fun movie.
Well, these are those movies too. It's like martial arts thing. I've watched it ever since I was a kid, but I feel the older I get, the more and more deeper I get in for my love of martial arts stuff. Like that's one of my favorite genres. Like, it's like that thing that like I can watch martial arts movies like every month and like I never get bored. And this movie was also a big one for me because this was the first rated R movie I saw in the cinemas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So is that like just because you were allowed to at that point, like you were allowed to stay?
I guess it's like I remember because I'd see rated R movies, you know, of course, at home on VHS and, you know, on TV. Well, you know, TV, depending on what channel it is, I guess it's either a rated R movie or it's a, you know, a PG.
Yeah.
you know, if it's on TBS, it's not even PG-13. It's like PG. Like once they edit.
Son of a biscuit.
Yeah. But yeah. And this was also. There was a new theater in town too, which is still the theater it's there to this day, but it was a sort of the changeover. And this was the second movie I think I remember seeing in that cinema. The first movie I saw was ironically See Spot Run. And then I think we saw Kiss of the Dragon, like, I don't know. It felt like it was only like a week later or something like that. You know,
dude, you've been rocking that AMC premieres list probably for like your entire life. Because I didn't get to see, there was a good chunk of my youth where I kind of didn't get to go to the movie theater much anymore, like when my brother and sister were little. And because when I was little, all the time, mm-hmm. because Alex and all that. But yeah, there was a good chunk there. So I didn't start going back to the movie theaters until 2002 is when I got a job there. Then I saw fucking everything.
Yeah, you kept catching up real fast.
Oh, God, dude. There was a lot of shit I saw. A lot of shit.
Dude, and I just think this era, like pretty much when Kiss the Dragon came out, this is the era where like people's parents would just drop us off at the movie theater at like 9 a.m. because movies actually played early back in those days. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and they would literally come by and pick us up at like 7-8 o'clock at night. We were just there for like 12 hours and you bought one ticket to get in and then you just free roamed all day long. If you got hungry, the secret was you go in the trash bin and you look through the popcorn bins and you look for if they marked an X on it or not. And a lot of times people just throw out the first one so they don't get their free refill. Dump that out, go get the free refill. Now you got something to eat.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
You know, and you could just let, and I just remember like there were some times, I mean, I remember me and my buddy Kyle, we watched like 9 movies. Like we watched everything that was in there.
Dude, you were like the street rat. You were like Aladdin of the movie theaters. Like,
true. And this was the same good era because it was pre-recession time. So you could literally go to like a pizza parlor and people would eat like half a pizza and just leave the rest there. So as kids, you'd go over once they've kind of left, take the other half and you got yourself more pizza. I noticed after 2008, I never saw that happen again.
No.
People kept their pizza. They sold on eBay later on. Because they knew they were going to need it.
Yeah. Pizza can have it. Shut the fuck up, kid.
people are just tossing things out. You know what I mean? They're like,
this ain't
not
2007.
A care in the world. It hasn't been September 11th yet. Everything was going good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Oh, this is just 2 months before everything went to shit. Kiss of the Dragon, 2001. Obviously starring Jet Li, Bridget Fonda. I almost try to say it's Checky Cairo.
I'll go with that.
Yeah, I'm butchering it. I'm really sorry, but as soon as I saw him, I'm like, the Patriot. He's the French guy from the Patriot. Rick Young, which looks just like the Gangnam Style, but older. Like he really does. And then a bunch of people you probably wouldn't really recognize their names. Director Chris Nahon, I'm assuming is how you say his name. And that's his number one. This when he says we go to his filmography, it says known for Kiss of the Dragon, it's the first thing that pops up. So yeah.
Well, not a lot. Weird. Yeah, I was going to say is because, you know, he's the director, but there's a lot of other big directors right around him because Corey Yun is doing all the fight scene directing. And, you know, he's done a bunch of martial arts stuff. He directed The Transporter. You know, he directed stuff. He literally has been working in stuff since literally like because he went to school with Jackie Chan and everything. So he's been in all the 70s stuff in the Bruce Lee all the way up to now from being stunts, directing, writing, all kinds of stuff. So he's in there. I mean, I think he's even a part of like some of the help out on like even like Matrix and some of the American movies that needed to kind of help. Sense. I think Lethal Weapon and all that stuff. And then to top it off, Luc Besson, I forgot about that. He's one of the writers on there with Jet Li. Mm-hmm. And it's like one of those, I will say this, you do not see an action movie in the last 30 years out of France that Luc Besson is not either producer, writer or director somehow involved. He is always in there. It feels like there's one France team that does all those badass action movies, and he's almost like the ringleader to that whole group, because that's the thing is I feel like France, and they're like, you know what, we have this stereotype of the movies that we do, so you know what, coming this late 80s, we're gonna make the most badass action movies anyone's ever seen on the face of the planet, and that's what France is gonna be known for.
they're like they were really, really going hard at it there for a minute. And I was really, when I saw his name at the beginning, I was like, oh, is he going to be in it? Please be in it. And he wasn't. I was really disappointed. Right. He's not in it anywhere. Is he like
Luke Besson?
Yeah.
No, he's just the screenplay, I think, on this one.
Yeah. I was hoping, I was like, maybe he had like a cameo or something that I missed. But yeah, I didn't see him in there at all. But he's awesome. Leon the Professional.
He's the director of that one. Are you thinking of the actor?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not. Luke Besson's the director of Leon the Professional. He's not Reno or...
Oh, Yeah. I was thinking of that. I do get their names mixed up sometimes.
Well, because they mostly always work together, too. Like, as I said, it seems like when you see every single time I kind of see French movies, like there's mostly always like a connection of like a handful of the guys all there. And then the other secret thing that I think France, like they started doing, which I guess you could technically Italians were doing this like way early on. But is you do that sort of thing that like you hide the movie that it's sort of a French movie. You get a couple of generally either American or British stars. In this case, we got Jet Li and Bridget Fonda. Mm-hmm. But you get those guys and then everybody else, the whole crew, the whole rest of the actors are all French. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like the movie's in English. So like you could sell it really easily to like the rest of the world and no one's really going to bat an eye right off the bat that, oh, wait a second, this is a French movie.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely let you know when Jet Li's beating everybody's ass with a French flag there for a minute. But yeah, it's not there, but it is there. It reminded me them tramps around Europe and having like a kind of like a action movie early 2000s. It kind of gave me Bourne Identity vibes a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what I was thinking watching this. I mean, very different movies, for the most part, but you know, there's some similarities there.
Yeah.
Narratively, but, yeah, I had never seen this. Let's look at the synopsis real quick for, I lost it. Give me a second. I was looking at Luke Besson because I remember I hated that guy because he was talking all the shit about how stupid Americans were because nobody wanted to see Valerian. Whatever.
I saw it.
You saw it, but like it was a big bust compared to because everybody said it was going to be this huge thing. And then nobody likes that one girl's. I can't remember her name. What's that girl's name?
The Valerian and Lorelai, whatever. I don't know who she I just know her as Lorelai because I was like most people like, oh cool though, they're doing this old French comic, you know. I'm totally down to go see this, and I saw it day one. I own it on Blu-ray.
There you go. I still haven't seen it. I've seen bits and pieces, but
it's good. I liked it. I mean, I'll pretty much see anything he does. I've been a fan of that guy's work since like La Femme Nikita, so
yeah. Here's the synopsis for Kiss of the Dragon. A betrayed intelligence officer enlists the aid of a prostitute to prove his innocence from a deadly conspiracy or returning a favor to her. There you go. So I'll say this about the beginning of the movie. It was kind of frustrating at the beginning because I was like, I like vagueness. I like being able to figure things out. It was doing a great job of building tension, but it was just a little too vague because I couldn't tell. Like, what is he there to assassinate somebody? You really don't know what's going on for a while.
Yeah.
And then when you do figure out that something big just happened, you still don't know what just happened. And they have to tell you, like, you just got betrayed. You had to kind of tell them. And so the first part of the movie was done really well. And I was kind of frustrated. But man, once this thing gets going, like, once the incident happens, that kind of, you know, starts all this mess. From that point on, this movie is so damn good. I had so much fun with it. I was frustrated early because Jet Li didn't have enough to say, like, well, who is this character? Why do I give a shit about him? But as the movie goes on, you care about him. I mean, it was a really well-structured, good movie.
Yeah, no, it's got some great action in it. And I don't know if you remember the trailer, but I just always remember like there's that part where he kicks the pool ball up in the air and kicks at the guy's face. Like that was the part that I remember the trailer would always end on. So you like knew that was coming there. And it's always like to me feels like, oh, there's the famous scene of the movie that if they're going to show a snippet of it, that's right. That.
Yeah, it was for the most part compared to like some of the other stuff we've watched. And the genre, especially compared to like Hard Boiled, it wasn't as stylistic. It wasn't, you know, as kind of over the top for the most part. It was a little bit more grounded. Mm-hmm. And like the action scenes were like really well shot and kind of like they tried to be practical as possible, not use many wires or, you know, not use any CGI. And they only used a little bit of either one of those. And I really appreciated that. It was really, really good. But I mean, not that I don't like the stylistic, crazy, over the top stuff. I love it. But it was nice seeing how this was done. There was only two parts of the movie. Actually just one part of the movie I did not like, but everything else was really, really good. But the action in this is really, really good.
Well, it's like this movie, you know what it kind of has? This one has sort of a very kind of grittiness, kind of darker, almost like it's made in a weird way, like a 70s movie, not a 70s kung fu movie, but almost like a 70s movie, like similar lines to something like even like a Taxi Driver or something like that. Like definitely not nearly as hardcore as mm-hmm. that is. It's definitely still got the happy ending and all that kind of stuff. Well, Taxi Driver has a happy ending, you know, but it all works out in that movie. Like that's the one thing is that movie's kind of like you went and shot all those, you know, Harvey Keitel and all that stuff. Like, good for you. You know what? The parents love you.
Yeah.
It all worked out.
Yeah. This one, I will say, I didn't think it was going to have a happy ending for a second there.
It doesn't feel like it would be one of those ones because it does have like, it could be one of those ones where like certain things just don't work out.
Yeah. And, you know, the villains, what makes this work is that the Czechy guy, whose name I butchered already three times, the French guy from The Patriot.
Yeah.
He is a really, really good villain and he's so sinister in this. And, just has no remorse for anything he does, doesn't care about anybody, but it's the way he delivers some of the lines. Getting ahead, there's gonna be spoilers, but at the very end of the movie, that line he says where, you know, he's kind of a pimp, he has all these hookers running around for, I guess that's his side hustle, I don't know.
Yeah, because he's also like chief inspector.
Yeah, he's chief inspector, but he also has hookers. I don't know if those are like his moles.
Yeah.
Like, hey, go fuck this guy and get some information for me, and then we'll, you know, use it on him. If we need to, I'm assuming that's kind of what's going on there. But, like the Bridget Fonda's character has a daughter. She's trying to get back from him and she's being held captive somewhere. You don't really know during the movie. And, when you finally meet her, he goes, I could send her to work for me. She's too young. Maybe not. I'm like, oh, you bastard, you evil, twisted, sick son of a bitch. But I liked that. Yeah. As a character for him, it was really, really good. So yeah, that was kind of, you know, the only, like I said, the only thing that kind of messed it up at the beginning is, okay, why is he a bad guy? Is Jet Li also a bad guy and he's going to turn into a good guy? Like, you don't really know until about 30 minutes in.
Yeah,
what you just watched, it takes a while to catch up.
Well, there's even that scene where like Richard goes and he's like talking to the Chinese embassy. He's like, yo, your guy Jet Li's really messed things up. Like, God, like he just went off like a maniac. And they kind of have that look on his face. You mean the guy who's our top, you know, police investigator of like all time in Hong Kong, who's got more awards than anybody else, who like, you know, literally like saved my 5-year-old son's birthday party. Like, you're trying to tell me this guy is the guy who it just turned rogue all of a sudden? Richard's like, yeah, like what? You don't believe me? We're in France. Like, you should believe me.
Yeah. This is my soil. English graves go weary on French soil. That's what I was thinking of when the whole time. Yeah, I'm going to reference The Patriot at least 20 more times in this, so sorry about that.
Okay, that's one of the best movies of all time.
It is. It really is. And I like him in it, too. But, yeah, so the movie, you know, obviously I'm not going to go through the whole plot, but basically at the beginning of the movie, Jet Li just shows up in France. He meets a reggae guy who I thought was going to be in the rest of the movie. I was really excited.
Like that guy seems like such a character.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be like the limo driver in Die Hard.
Yeah.
You know, and he just kind of keeps showing back up. I thought that was going to be the thing, but it wasn't. I was really disappointed. But yeah, he's just kind of hanging out in France. He goes to a safe house and you're like, who the fuck are you? Just what are you doing? Like, you think he's going to like maybe assassinate like an elected official. Mm-hmm. But everything's very vague, but it does build so much tension and it builds to this moment where that, what is that guy? The Rick Young guy or whatever his name is.
Okay, yeah. The Mr. Big.
Yeah, Mr. Big. He's a target. You don't know why he's a target. You just know he kind of is. So you don't know if Jet Li's there to like assassinate this guy or protect him or what's going on. But when he's killed and he's got like this, he's got a couple hookers that he's, you know, really, really excited about.
Yeah.
like way too excited about. The hookers come in there. One of them is Bridget Fonda, but she's not ready to work. She's a little bit sick, and you'll figure out why. And then the other lady's got the dragon tattooed, and the whole movie, I'm like, that's why this is called Kiss of the Dragon. And yeah, shit goes down. He gets killed and gently has to take out a few bodyguards to get in there. And then you find out, because the French guy tells you, we just framed you. So then that opens up to the first really big action scene in the movie where he's got to run through the hotel. Mm-hmm. And get everything. What I thought was funny through this whole movie is that every time he escapes, every time Jet Li escapes, he always manages to get by them without them seeing. But the French guy always knows where the fuck he is. Third floor, fifth floor, under the bridge. It doesn't matter. Like, he always knows where he's at. Like, he's really good at telling. He just can't catch up with them. I just always thought that was funny the whole movie.
He always knows, but that's it. As far as it goes.
Yeah. He's under the bridge. I'm like, you still know where he's at? Like, how do you know this shit? Like, you'd think you'd be better at, you know, figuring this out ahead of time.
He didn't know he was underneath the car when they went to drive off.
He did not know that. That was the smoothest one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, shit goes down. And then he kind of gets separated. You don't see Bridget Fonda for a while. And you're just basically, for a while, the movie's trying to pick up pieces. There's the meeting you mentioned where they're like, your guy fucked up. Like, yeah, our guy's like the best guy. And by the way, Chinese people don't fuck up anyway. So, like, I doubt it. And then he's on the run. And that's basically the rest of the movie. And every time he gets close to trying to figure something out, they just fucking assassinate everyone.
Yeah, they come in there because he's kind of like, Jet Li's got his like uncle figure or whatever that he goes to like sort of hang out with, who owns like the shrimp cookie making place and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, of course, that's where Bridget Fonda just happens to be, her like hooker routes right around there.
Well, actually, you know, it wasn't.
Oh, no, I guess that's true. But she just sort of barges her way into, like, Jet Li's life. And literally, like, let's be honest, Bridget Fonda is the whole reason why Jet Li's uncle guy ends up getting killed, is because she just happens to have to force her way in there when Jet Li clearly does not want her around.
Yeah, he's like, please get away from me. And she's like, are you gay or something? She doesn't sound like that, but...
It's a very 2000 thing to be like, oh, he must be gay. He doesn't like women.
Yeah. Well, you never met the hooker before? Like, no, I haven't actually. But yeah, so Bridget Fonda, her deal with her character is she's really good in this. I loved her in this. Uh-huh. We're so bad with characters' names.
Sometimes I don't know. Her name's Jessica, but sometimes I think it's easier to refer to them as their like actor name sometimes.
Yeah. Or we'll refer to them as another actor that they look like. It's the popular via VHS thing to do.
Yeah.
Bridget Fonda's character, Jessica, really good character. You don't know why she's involved with the French guy for a while. You think she's just a hooker, and she is, but she's hooking because this French guy's got her daughter. You know, she's from North Dakota. She's a little farmer girl. And she, you know, has this kid, and this guy kind of sells her the world. And then, you know, he gets her addicted to heroin. And so every time she has a conversation with him, he shoots her up, and she's like, oh, damn it, now I'm high again. And becomes a hot mess express for a little bit, but she's just trying to get her daughter back. And so Jet Li and Bridget Fonda, have a common enemy in this movie, and it's the French asshole.
You know what's the funny thing is, this is a French movie, and all the bad guys are French in the movie. You think about that? Mm-hmm. Like even the person, like, she's like, I met a French guy. I thought I was going to be cool. I was going to be foreign, everything like that, you know? And then because he was French, next thing you know, on the street being a hooker.
At least the French are self-aware.
You know? I guess that's sort of it, because like that's the thing about it. You're like, wait a second, all the good characters are all like American, you know what I mean, or American or Chinese, you know what I mean. Bridget Fonda, you know, Jet Li, all that stuff. I mean, even Bridget Fonda, you could say Bridget Fonda's daughter might be French just because that's the school she's been in her whole life, but she's still, I guess, probably born American.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't know. I can't get over how good that Czechy guy was. There was another scene there. He had so many nice little touches in there. But one of my favorite parts is when they kill, Jet Li has all this crazy stuff where he's trying to get in touch with one of his contacts, one of the people from his government. And he goes to a, he goes to like a locker to get a phone out. Then he has opens up another locker and there's a ton of guns in there. Felt very Bourne Identity again, which just came out before Bourne Identity, but he has run away. And when he finally meets one of his contacts, it was the main guy that was defending him at the, you know, when he was talking to the French guys, he gets shot. And, oh God, where the fuck was I going with that? I'm talking about, oh yeah, nice touch. So he gets shot and they kill, you know, one of his main guys. So he has to flee again. But when he's, his body's in the morgue or whatever, and the French guy's looking over him, he's like, well, you know, they have a billion of them. They're not going to miss one more. So just send them some flowers or something. And they're like, wow, how much? He goes, I don't know. And he takes the dead guy's wallet, gives him the money, says, this much. And I'm like, man, what a dick. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's like he's still going to get that across the flowers, but he's not going to use any money except for whatever the guy had on him.
Yeah, what a dick nugget. Oh, man. Yeah,
no, that guy plays such a good villain.
It's the second half of the movie where it was a lot of character building for a while, and it was all good. And just kind of figuring out, you know, the relationship between Jet Li and the hooker. And then as that kind of, when that finally kind of comes to a head and all that's going on, that's when you get that really badass fight scene with, you know, one of the pimps and his giant 7 foot tall black guy that comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, just who's just ready for like title fight.
He really was.
He was just prepped and ready for that.
Like, I was in there thinking, because y'all could have used this guy earlier. It just seems like, yeah, it just, I guess they were saving him for like when they really needed him, but I think he gave Jet Li the best fight in this.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, there is that other cool fight where you have like the twin blonde guys that look like they both could be stand-ins for Guile out of Street Fighter, but
They did.
But that scene at the end's kind of cool where he has to fight those guys and they're in the glass office area and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. It becomes the whole action scenes at the end are just amazing. Like all through it. But yeah, you have that big fight scene. Jet Li figures out how Bridget Fonda is attached to this whole thing. They become friends because they have a common enemy. And then he's got to go help her get her daughter. And then it's just messed throughout, but I thought the action scenes were so, so well done in this. I think most of the crazy stuff, if there was any like non-practical stuff, was used in the fight with the twins, it felt like, because they were doing some crazy flips that just felt like out of this world.
Yeah. Well, I think for the most part, that was the whole thing is that it was like, there was sort of that like post or right around the Matrix era, and people are kind of going back, you know, Crouch Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and everything like that. And everything was kind of going a little bit more wire foo again, just like it was like the 50s, but, or 50s going in the 60s era. But, and it's like, I know that was kind of one of the big things is Jet Li wanted to kind of ground it. But I want to say that because there's like three movies that I always kind of think of in Jet Li's kind of catalog that all kind of remind me almost like an unofficial trilogy. They're, you know, of course, they don't. Not the same character or anything like that, but there's Romeo Must Die, Cradle to the Grave, and then this movie, Kiss the Dragon. Like these three, they all kind of came at the same time. And I want to say this was the third one in the list. I could be kind of wrong, but I want to say it went like Cradle to the Grave, Romeo, then this one. But they all kind of got that sort of rap soundtrack to them in a sense, that kind of like that hip hop martial arts, you know, combination, you know, and, yeah, there's just
which,
some like
which works, by the way.
Yeah, it's one of those. That's like that thing that's like it combines so well together that like that Wu-Tang Clan kind of vibe is like what is. It's the same thing of like anime. Like it's just like when you see like Afro Samurai and Samurai Champloo and all that stuff. Like like that hip hop and martial arts and samurais and all that stuff just like clicks so perfectly in that's a weird way that doesn't set like on paper. I feel like no one would have ever thought like, but it like it works so well. And Jet Li just kind of like had that going really well, like in, like because this is just like his pinnacle when he's just on top. Like it's weird because Jackie Chan kind of comes in and hits real hard, but you know I think maybe because he's a little bit older, it's like we need a younger guy by this point. And then Jet Li fills that void for like, hey, here's the guy for like all like the, you know, 15-year-old kids to root for, you know, in high school. And that was like what Jet Li sort of was. I mean, and then some of his movies get like hardcore on hitting that like 15-year-old kid one. Like, you ever see Jet Li's The One?
Mm-mm. No.
Jet Li's The One has one of the best, but like in like a funny kind of way you could kind of say it endings. Jet Li has to fight Jet Li at the very end, and it's outside and it's raining. And the song that they use while he's fighting each other is the Let the Bodies Hit the Floor. Like, it's one of those ones when you see that scene, you know where you were in 2003.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh my. Yeah. That's funny. It's so weird. Like, some of the mic drops in these movies, the needle drops, I meant to say, are kind of odd. Like, Super Cop was the weirdest one because it was hip hop out of nowhere. But that was a big thing in the 80s. Every time they did it, like, we watched Slipstream, and there's like a fucking random. This wild score all the way out. Then all of a sudden there's a random pop song in the middle of it. And they're like, what? Who did coke at this point at the soundtrack to make this thing happen? But, you know.
Well, and the Jackie Chan ones are kind of bizarre because it's like the Chinese version, that's not there. And that's like one of those ones that like dimensions, like, you know what? You know, Jackie Chan's getting a little bit old, but how will we make him hip again? Throw some rap songs in there.
Yeah. Put them in the video awkwardly.
Yeah, that's like sort of what happens with those ones, where the Jet Li ones are like tailored with that in mind. And I think that's why they work.
Well, Jet Li, okay, let's just be real, has more of an edge to him than Jackie Chan does. Mm-hmm. Like, Jackie Chan's probably, he might be the better all around at all this stuff. But the reason the juxtaposition between him and Chris Tucker works so well in Rush Hour is because while Jackie Chan is such a badass, really, his persona, his smile is just goofy white guy kind of vibe, you know, just like dorky, like, you know, whatever. And Jet Li don't have that vibe at all. He has like, you know, bad motherfucker vibe, you know, to me. So,
well, it's because Jet Li, because he's almost kind of got like, in a sense, a similar vibe that Bruce Lee gives out. I mean, like, I mean, I know they both got Lee in the end of their names, but like, he literally has that kind of feel. I mean, it makes sense why he even played Bruce Lee's character in the Legend of the Fist one, which is like a remake of Chinese Connection, you know. And even like in his older movies, like in his 90s movies, like if you've ever seen Once Upon a Time in China, or technically it's called Wong Fei Hung in China. And it's a story of Wong Fei Hung, which is already a cool story as is, like the Chinese like superhero kind of guy from like the late 1800s and the 1900s that has like more stories told about him than anybody else. But that movie is like one of those ones where like the action's ridiculous. And the second one, he fights Donnie Yen at the very end, which is totally badass.
Love Donnie Yen.
And it's just a cool historical story too, to top it off, because that's the whole thing. Is like, that's the time period where British knows best. And then Wong Fei Hung comes in and says, no way.
Yeah. Get the Wong Fei Hung out of here, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had fun with this movie. I think this is definitely, it's so relieving. We watch so much shit, you know, and like, or it's like good in its own way, but it's not really satisfying watch. Like Corvette Summer was like that. It was good. I, you know, I had fun with it, but it wasn't like a, man, I'm so glad I watched that. But this one was like that. This one I had a lot of fun with.
It was, this is like one of those ones where it's kind of like you go, oh man, like this is something I do wish you know, you kind of experienced at one time. But at the same point, even though you didn't experience it when it came out, like you could still enjoy it now and go, oh man, this is an awesome movie. And it just adds to something cool to see. Where Corvette Summer is more just interesting because it's like, hey, here's this weird Mark Hamill movie that came after, you know, Star Wars.
Here's Annie Potts from Ghostbusters looking fine as frog fur.
Yeah, and her giant van that's cooler than the Corvette.
It is. It was cooler. Yeah. And that's 2 weeks in a row we've had hookers.
Yeah. So that might be the theme somehow, some way.
Yeah. They don't want to be hookers.
Well, and even Waterworld, there's a point where it almost feels like Kevin Costner's just going to sell those women off as hookers. So.
Yeah. Or she offers herself.
Yeah.
Down so. The boat. Hey, here, bone me so you don't kill my kid.
that's really like no different than what Bridget Fonda has to do.
Basically. Yeah. Wow, that's three. Okay, we're just going to go ahead and say 3 weeks in a row we've had hookers. What are we doing next week? We'll find out soon.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. It did feel like when I went and saw this movie, like kind of like as like, I guess the first rated R movie, it does feel like, oh, this movie is kind of a little bit like more of an intense one. It's not just like a, hey, it just happens to be rated R because there's a little bit more extra violent martial arts in there. It's like, oh, no, it literally has that like adult themes category.
Oh, 100%. Definitely has some adult themes. And yeah, but this was a fun movie. This was really, really good. And it's kind of nice to dip our toes into the early 2000s because to us, this is still fresh. You know what I mean? Like it's compared to the other stuff that we do. I mean, this is like Corvette Summer was like 78. Mm-hmm. So this movie's 23 years old by the time that comes out. So.
Well, it's weird. This movie's almost 23 years old by now. It's 22 years old, which is so bizarre to think about. And this is the weird thing to me because I look at a movie like this and it still comes across as like, this is pretty much, I would consider this a brand new movie in a weird way. Not like brand new, but it's still in the new era. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think, but then you talk to some other people and they would look at you like, oh man, that movie must be really old. It's 22 years old. And they're like, I wouldn't even watch it. It's that old. And you're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, that's the good shit.
Yeah,
better
exactly.
That now.
Yeah, I still even have a hard time saying that the 70s movie's old. I'm like, it's a little bit.
Yeah. It's old it's old if it's older than me.
Yeah.
That's usually when I think it's old, but I don't mean there's still variations of that, but this is definitely compared to what we do. This is brand new.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You know, these are like those tail end. This is like you're getting the VHS of this one because nobody in your household's upgraded to a DVD player yet.
But, yes. I mean, I was in high school when this came out.
Yeah.
So
I didn't have this on VHS. I had it on DVD, I guess, from the earliest I can remember. But
yeah, I always go back and forth about the first DVD I bought. I know Night's Tale was in there and I think Spider-Man, but I can't remember.
I got True Lies and then Spaceballs was technically the first one I bought.
Those are good.
Yeah. So it was a good, that was like my forceful way to be like, hey, mom, we're going to need a DVD player soon. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, because I keep buying these DVDs and I'm going to need a way to watch them.
I was able to get one because Jody, my Uncle Jody, just Uncle Jody reference for the week. He bought a new computer and he thought it was so cool that you could watch DVDs on it, but nobody had any. So he went out and bought one. And the one he bought was Total Recall.
Ooh, that was a good one to have. That was probably in my top 10 or 15 first movies I got was Total Recall.
Mm.
And I got that the one that's, it was a, it came in like a circular case that was just like, you know, Mars.
Oh, no, yeah. The one he had one of those early DVDs that had the flip thing on the
side.
Oh,
yeah.
That was what he had. That's the first DVD I ever watched was Total Recall.
Total Recall. Gosh. Yeah. I think that's a good question. What's the first DVD I ever watched?
Man, I don't even know what the first VHS I watched was. I mean, I know the first one I can remember watching, like actually putting it in the VCR was Land Before Time.
Yeah, I think Little Mermaid was the first VHS because that was the first VHS I had. Mm. And then I almost want to say first DVD or at least one of them. I want to say Matrix. I remember seeing that at a buddy's house because it seemed like that was that time they got a DVD player. But that could have still been Laserdisc because the Matrix still came out on Laserdisc.
Mm. I don't know.
Because it's weird. Like, because Laserdisc just peters out right about 99. Like it's one of those ones because I was looking. I was doing my Arnold Schwarzenegger collection of Laserdisc movies. Mm-hmm. And I have about all of them except for three now. I went on like a month spree of catching up on all the ones I was missing. Dang, and I was looking like, I wonder, do they have an End of Days Laserdisc? And I couldn't find an End of Days one. So I'm assuming that was like the last Arnold Schwarzenegger movie that was not put on a, well, I guess the last one was Jingle All the Way that was put on Laserdisc, but I don't think they made End of Days on Laserdisc.
Jingle All the Way.
That one's oddly expensive. I don't know why Jingle All the Way. It's like $35. I can't find one cheaper than that. I'm like, you think there would have been a lot of copies of that movie. Like, yeah. It would have been like True Lies that you're just getting it with everything you buy.
Yeah. Jesus. Oh, True Lies, and now you can't even get it.
No, I have my True Lies Blu-ray is from Spain. That's the only place you.
I remember this.
Yeah, Spain is the thing that, like, you know, when other countries fail you in bringing out a good version, Spain will bring you out one. My Super Mario Brothers movie is also from Spain.
Oh, of course it is. I have to remember that. Well, 2001, it was fun to go back to high school and look at a movie that I missed at the time, but I wish I had watched, because I would have stayed up late nights watching this thing and binging it. It definitely would have been on the playlist. But yeah, Kiss of the Dragon, you've never seen it. I rented it. It's not, I don't think it's streaming anywhere right now, but you could find it. It's there. Yeah. There is a version on Daily Motion that I was going to watch, and I was like, this can't be how the movie starts with these bunny rabbits. That can't be it. And then it was, and I still don't understand what the meaning was of the dead rabbit.
Oh, yeah, God, that's like such a weird, like, that's like one of those ones, are you in or are you out scenes? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, if you can't handle the dead bunny rabbit at the very beginning, like...
Yeah, but like that was,
that's like two steps away from just being like a dog eating another dog at the very beginning of a movie.
Was there just a dead rabbit out there and they just filmed it because it was like, oh, we can film this other rabbits eating around the dead rabbit and show how cold and callous they are?
I think so. I don't know, because I forgot about that scene until you mentioned it. I'm like, oh yeah, that is the beginning of this movie.
Yeah, it's the weirdest fucking, like, it started, I started on Daily Motion, and I literally rented it because I saw that, and I'm like, there's no fucking way this movie starts like this. This is not right. So then I went and rented it, and I was like, oh, I was wrong. It doesn't start this way.
it never comes back to that rabbit. It's like,
that explains the rabbit.
That must be a very French artistic, like, thing to have.
What was that? And I think that was a real dead rabbit too.
I think so.
Yeah, it did not look, you know, it was a very practical effect. So now that leads to the question, is this a situation where they were out there filming for the airplane to come in, and out in that field, there was a dead rabbit, and the rabbit's eating, and they're like, let's film this. Or did they kill a fucking rabbit?
Exactly. You know.
Because, you know, this is France. They don't have our Peter rules over there. Let's do what the fuck you want.
You know what? And, you know, they might have, maybe they were just going to eat the rabbit afterwards. You know, it'd be like Cannibal Holocaust. All the dead animals in there, the crew ate them. It wasn't like they just killed the kill. They just happened to film it when they did it.
There's an Asian cuisine joke. I'm not going to go after it, but there's somewhere in there. There's one. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. The whole opening of this was so weird. I literally stopped it. I was watching Daily Motion, and I was like, this isn't I'm at the wrong movie. I'm looking at the wrong thing. I don't care what this is. And then go on Vudu, and I'm like, where's this fucking rabbits again? Like, what are we in for? And then 45 seconds later, you forget about the rabbits.
See, now I wonder if on that Daily Motion one, if that's good, because as I said, there was like I read that there was a little bit more of an extended cut in France only, where there's a little bit more violence.
Well, the weird thing on the Daily Motion one was it still was a little different at the very beginning. It showed the rabbits, but you didn't. I don't remember seeing the dead rabbit. So I don't know.
And then in China, they couldn't play this movie. Ironically, it was too violent. And Jet Li went on a whole tyrant going, like, you know, come on, dude, like, creativity, freedom of expression. China, don't be such a bitch.
Well, is this really more violent than Super Cop? I mean,
I think it's got more adult themes. I think that's more what it is. It's like, it's not necessarily violent. It's one of those movies. It's like borderline, in my opinion, I think it's like a hard PG-13 that just has a couple things that turn into an R. Like, yeah. I don't, you know, I mean, if you cut, like, you know, probably less than 30 seconds out of this movie, it's easily a PG-13 movie. Like, it's just, there's a couple slight violent scenes. There's a couple F-bombs. And I think that's about it. Maybe some very, very minor. There's like, there's no nudity in the movie.
China didn't like it because of the big black guy in it.
Yeah. he was too imposing, I guess, but...
Yeah, well, it's just like Star Wars. They made him take John Boyega off the posters. And Disney did it because they're all about inclusivity because...
Yeah.
Fuck Disney. What? I didn't say that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
But yeah. As I said, that's the weird thing is this movie just, to me, it feels like it's maybe a hard PG-13 is what I'd really truly call it.
Yeah, it's definitely, I agree with you. I think you're right. It's the adult themes that separate it from Super Cop.
Yeah.
And some other ones, because I don't feel like definitely not more violent than Hard Boiled.
Well, hardboiled is a full R, though, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm just talking about in terms of it being shown.
Yeah. The only thing I think of it's probably just the hooker thing, but because that I bet you that's what it is. Because even like in Jackie Chan's American movie, The Protector, the one where it's kind of like a Dirty Harry Jackie Chan movie, which I think it's actually cool. Jackie Chan hates that movie, but like I think that's actually kind of a neat movie because it's just different. Mm-hmm. When Jackie Chan went to re-edit it himself and take it away from the Enter the Dragon guy, he cut out all the hookers in it and so on in the movie. So maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, maybe there's just like a big anti-hooker movement out there.
In China.
Yeah. Oh, because they don't want to have any more kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that line where it's just like they asked Jet Li, like, what, you'd never have a hooker? Like... like that's just something you do on a Tuesday
here in France.
Yeah, it's just so common.
Yeah, you take your baguette, you shove it in one and go off to work, you know.
Yeah. Whoa. Not being a hooker is like being someone who doesn't smoke cigarettes.
The French. Well, anyway, I hope this was coherent enough for everyone listening. This was definitely an ADHD special review. there's some stuff I'll have to trim here.
We were just trying to figure out why this wasn't played in China. At the end of the day, that's what it all sums up to.
Why the dead rabbit? Why wasn't this played in China?
There's the dead rabbit. I don't know. Maybe that's as far as they got.
Maybe it was. Maybe they started off like, what the like, pause. What the fuck is with the rabbit?
Yeah,
I don't know. We don't really have a good explanation for the rabbit. It's just there. So. The rabbit's weird. Anyway, thank y'all for listening. If you made it to the end of this somehow, if you want to discuss this movie with us, you can go to @VIAVHS on X, formerly Twitter, the artist formerly known as Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram @VIAVHS Pod. You can go onto the Tiki Talky and find us there @VIAVHS. And there you go. Also you can go to oldmanorange.com and find all the great stuff Spencer does. You could find Pizza Boys comic, which there's some new work on the horizon.
Yeah, very close.
Getting very close. I have to do some research on that for you. And some other stuff. So keep an eye out on that. Obviously Old Man Orange podcast and all that stuff. There's links everywhere for that. So thank y'all for listening. Y'all have a good one. If you have any answers on the dead rabbit, please let us know. And VIAVHS is out.